Hello, Ernest.
Hello, Ernest. How are you?
Doing good.
Great. Yeah,
the weather is actually looking nice at the moment, which is a change. Either it's been too cold or too hot, it seems like, or too smoky.
Yeah.
How is your health?
My health?
Yeah.
Good. The weather is great, too.
Mm-hmm. Nice. So I'm very excited about today's call. I thought last session was very, very real.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually been a theme I'm running into lots of other places. Is on the one hand, in order for our systems to function well, we want people to be principled. We want them to follow the rules. We want them to be transparent. We want them to be accountable for their actions. On the other hand, for human beings to be healthy, we want to have self-expression. We want to be authentic. We want people to meet us where we are. And there is this tension that I run into a lot, it seems, where in the short run, you want people to be principled so the systems run well. But in the long term, you want people to be authentic so the individuals involved are actually healthy. And, you know, I feel like we kind of hit that issue head on last week. And this is where this actually gets back to the question you asked a few weeks ago, is that, well, why do we need religion? And I think the reason this becomes a problem is that if people were perfect, if we were just rational actors that always lived up to our principles, then we could just say, oh, this person has the right principles. Just follow those principles. This way this person is doing it and everything will be fine. And we've tried various versions of that over the centuries. And what you eventually discover is that, well, A, nobody really lives up to the principles. And B, if we put that expectation on human beings, they will deceive us or we will deceive ourselves. Because nobody can really live up to those principles all the time. And so the solution we've come up with as a society, as human beings, is that we have to have some sort of transcendence. And I use that as a relatively neutral word, is that there is something beyond any individual that is the thing that we are loyal to. And, you know, there's many different versions of this. The ones that have tended to work are, originally it was like ancestors. Well, this is the thing that the ancestors, as remembered by the elders, always did. And that's by definition a traditional culture, Confucianism probably being the most systematic form of that. Another form of that is animism, closely related in some ways, except instead of being dead ancestors, it's the spirits of other things, gods, trees, whatever. And again, sometimes that's interpreted by ancestors, sometimes there's a concept of a shaman who says, these are the behaviors you have to do to appease the gods. And from a modern secular viewpoint, you could say, well, these are all just superstitions, but they create this sense of there's this transcendent thing that, punishes bad behavior and therefore it's used to enforce pro-social norms. Animism and then paganism, I guess, is the more accurate term for like the Greek polytheism, in that there are these gods who represent different principles that people take seriously, either as actual entities or as actual principles that have philosophical weight. And, you know, everyone's expected to play at least lip service to these traditions, primarily as interpreted by political powers. And, you know, that worked pretty well for a few hundred years here and there. Of course, monotheism, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, had this idea of, you know, what we consider when we use the word God in this culture, of a single all-seeing, more or less benevolent entity who punishes good and evil. And then after that, interestingly, arguably the most successful system has been Marxism, where the idea of dialectical materialism and the inexorable flow of history became this transcendent ideal that people believed to, you know, which was sort of, I guess, interpreted through the dictatorship of the proletariat. Oh, I should mention that in Christianity, the usual normative behavior was interpreted through the church hierarchy, although at least there was this interesting feature where there sort of recognized spiritual communities, and occasionally you'd get a reformer, like a St. Francis of Assisi, whom San Francisco is named after, who was not part of the church hierarchy, but was able to exemplify the values in a way that would provoke reform within the power structures. So that interesting combination of having both a formal power structure that managed to today, but almost sort of a parallel structure that allowed people to critique into that, which I guess started around like the 3rd century BC, even with, I guess, Socrates critiquing the political establishment. You know, that was an interesting development in that there was not just legitimate authority, there was also legitimate protest. So anyway, so this idea of trend, so this is why, and, you know, we are truly engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived and so dedicated can long endure, is that, you know, in many ways, America is a post-Christian nation. On the other hand, it's not at all clear what replaces it. For a long time, there's been sort of a mantra in America that the Constitution is the thing that holds us together. But the, and we'll probably find out in the next couple of weeks whether that's still true. And, but even beyond that, there's this, well, it's kind of a circular problem, right? Is that the Constitution was written by people, interpreted by judges, judges appointed by selective powers, and then it's like, well, okay, if the only standard of truth is the Constitution, and the only standard of what the Constitution true is who Supreme Court justices are, then it becomes, if that's really the case, then the only rational act is to sacrifice all other principles to have the right to nominate Supreme Court justices who will interpret the Constitution. And that is, let's just say, an unsatisfying answer. Or at least I personally find it unsatisfying. But what's the alternative? And this is the conundrum we find ourselves faced with.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you've had any reflections on your on the conversation we had, but that's where I wanted to start it.
Mm-hmm. We can touch on this subject of the justices, and you know, the system is totally broken. You know, people talk about, oh, we can't just politicize the courts. They are already politicized completely, as in irrevocably politicized. You know, some people say, oh, no, this is the way it should be. Well, no. If somebody can change the nature of justice by putting one person who believes that, who's against and has published the fact that she is against abortion, and putting this person in there, and she's going to play a major role in the abortion rights, of the freedom of choice of women across this country, that is a broken system.
Well, here's the question. But then what's the alternative? You're saying that the only broken system is the only non-broken system would be one that never allows anyone who disagrees with you to have power?
It's not. Well, that thing, power, is important. It's like.
Just to be clear, let's talk about, there's a broken result, but that to say that it's a broken system, right? So, this is a really big deal, right? Because most people, when they use these words nowadays, they say broken or wrong to mean something I disagree with. And the word for that in scientific analysis is resulting. Okay? If you have a well-functioning system, it will occasionally have false positives and false negatives. That is the nature of systems. And to say that the system is broken, which I'm not saying it's necessarily a false statement, is to say it's not that this particular decision is wrong. It's the fact that we are following this strategy that is flawed. And so when, I want you to be precise. Are you saying, okay, the fact that the system had an unfortunate, had a flawed or a bad outcome is one thing. To say the system, so are you saying that the only system you will ever allow is one that never makes wrong decisions? Or is there something actually fundamentally broken about the system?
Yes, the latter. And the reason
latter,
I say
okay.
But to
what standard are you applying then? Let me rephrase my statement. The way that Americans have tried to govern our system, post the 1950s consensus, and there's lots of issues with the 1950s consensus of let's call it WASP nativism, was basically where we kind of ended up as a culture is that, well, we have this white Anglo-Saxon Protestant heritage, which is a certain set of shared values, and we want that to be normative America. And that fell apart in the 50s and 60s and 70s. And arguably what's replaced it is this sense of, well, the Constitution is the thing. And so if that's true, if the Constitution is the only transcendent thing that binds us together, then the only thing that matters is who gets to interpret the Constitution. And you're saying that if you're saying that that's not true, which by the way I agree with, okay, what standard do we use instead?
We have a set of laws, precedents, codes, all those things. I see that as a system of laws, right? Yes.
Okay. Yeah. We have a formal system or a system of laws. Yes. We do have a system of laws. Okay.
Yes. You place one person or a different person in a court, that not only the Supreme Court, but any type of court, and this person can choose what path through the law system and law codes follow.
We have a system of laws which are interpreted and enforced by human beings. We have a system of laws where all of the laws are, so it's not like Hammurabi or Moses or whatever, where the laws come handed to us on a golden tablet. We have a system of laws which are created, interpreted, and enforced by human beings. Okay, that is the system we have today.
Mm-hmm.
And where are you going with this?
We have to first systematize that system, as in, we have all these computers, all these mainframes. Well, we can, we have to rewrite it you write a program or something similar, not exactly, but something similar so that you have some sort of determinism. So this act happens.
Whoa. So are you saying you want to get rid of having humans create, interpret, and execute, enforce the laws, or rather having living humans do it, have the people who program the computers do it?
No, you,
okay.
Well, just as an example, yeah. No, I don't want to eliminate anything. It's like now we have certain. Hello, you're back.
Hello, yeah, not sure what happened there. But yes, we're saying that you said you wanted the system to be more deterministic.
Correct. And it's like...
What do you mean by deterministic? Typically that means less human discretion.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Well, an example
less human discretion means that those who write things, so that what that implies is that once you write the laws, that there's no longer any, when you write the laws and write the programs for, does that mean you write the laws and therefore you write the programs for interpreting and enforcing the laws?
No. Well, you write some of it, right? You're the computer or the system would compute an outcome. Now we still have people that, you know, hey, is this something that we can live with? And those people, justices cannot, or justices, lawyers, whatever, they have been prohibited from using whatever core beliefs they have, religious, non-religious, in making the decisions. They should just go down the line.
So this is, you're basically arguing the constructivist approach to the Constitution, and therefore you agree with the conservatives that the Warren Court was illegitimate in ordering school segregation, and that Roe v. Wade, the inferring a new right to choice, was also illegitimate because that was not part of the original construction of those laws. No. Okay, so you're not saying that whoever writes the laws up front actually deserves to have their instructions obeyed literally.
Yes. Where, you know,
so which one? I'm not sure what you're trying to, which side you're arguing. Are you arguing that we don't want people interpreting the law, or you're arguing that we do?
We actually both. Like, we have the system, you know, we develop some deterministic system.
Are you just saying you want
laws.
People you like interpreting the law and not people you don't like?
No. I'm saying that we have to be less driven by a religion or personal
So why are religious views off the table? So, well, let's go back to the Warren Court, 1970s, or late 1960s, early 1970s. The Constitution as written and understood by everyone until that time was that the court only had the right to interpret existing laws sort of in the mindset of what they were written as, and that they did not have the discretion to reinterpret the laws based on their personal views of what was just. And Warren said, no, we think that we have the ability to intuit the spirit of the laws and reinterpret them according to what we think is actually the most appropriate use of achieving the intent, regardless of the letter. Do you think that Warren, in this interpretation, was acting in accord with the principles you want or against them?
I don't know. The truth is that
exactly.
You know,
the truth
people,
is we don't know.
But
right, and
but,
so you're trying to make a really hard and fast law that you don't have to deal with any of the hard cases. And the whole reason we have judges, the whole reason we have humans in the system, as flawed and messy, as imperfect as it is that, and that we have arguments, you know, endlessly about, well, is it original intent? Is it space? It's like, these are hard questions. And to say, well, this is the right answer seems like, you know, just because you don't like the decisions in a certain context seems to me actually a sign that the system is working. It's a flawed system. It's a messy system. It's an ugly system. But what's the alternative?
Yeah.
Is there any alternative that you're really willing to stand by and say, yes, this is a principle that I will hold to even when it goes against my other beliefs and values?
Yes. Well, we can see the ACLU as an example, as a good example. The ACLU has one specific purpose. To uphold the rights of the individual and entities, regardless
of freedom of speech,
you know,
yeah,
freedom of speech,
right.
Freedom of religion. The ACLU will take both sides and will
fight it out and so forth. Yeah,
it will defend Nazis. It will defend these crazy people with the guns. It will also defend the rights of people not to be shot by these crazy people. So. That's a entity that tries to make sure that the rights of everyone are
They've chosen a single principle that they are willing to follow even when they personally find it abhorrent. I mean, this is Voltaire's statement, right? I will despise what you're saying, but I will fight to the death to defend your right to say it. Right? So, okay, it is certainly possible for individual interest groups to pick a principle and live up to it more or less consistently. I'm asking about you. What is there really a principle that you hold to that is actually transcendent, that you will hold to it even when you have to do things you would otherwise find abhorrent?
Yes, science, medicine, research. I am take this detour. I am of the view that science is the ultimate way to obtain knowledge.
And so what do you even mean by science?
I mean, real science. I mean,
let's be more precise, okay? Because science means many things to many people. What I would say is that let's use the term the scientific method. Is that given two alternatives, the belief or policy that best embodies the scientific method is the one I would trust. Is that a fair statement?
Yes.
Okay, now that is a very different thing than saying I believe in science, well, whoever has the most scientific credentials is the most trustworthy. I mean, we've seen that played out with horrific effect in the last 9 months with the CDC and the WHO. Like, just because is that sometimes people have had to choose between following the scientific method and taking the evidence seriously and following the injunctions of official scientific organizations. And we're very grateful for the ones who actually chose to disobey the nominal scientific authorities in order to be faithful to the data and the scientific process. But those are two very different things, even though historically they've often overlapped. So you believe that, as I do, I mean, the phrase I use that we talked about way back in season one was honest collaborative inquiry into competing alternatives, right? This idea is that you have a wide range of freedom to consider different options, and then you actually compare them against the evidence in a community that's actually sincerely trying to figure out what is true.
Mm-hmm.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So what that means then is that if I point out to you that one of your beliefs fails that test, you would change it.
If you can prove to me that I'm wrong and you have the facts behind you, not just conjecture and think, you know, you have facts. You can show me a train of thought and, you know, experiments and all that stuff. If you can show me that I'm wrong, you know, factually, then of course, I accept that.
All right. So we have, let's call it a meta principle, the scientific method. I had to give the nickname new for normalization. But we have that principle. Okay, so the interesting question is, so let's agree that the, now, here's the thing that gets interesting. When you do a scientific analysis, you never get absolute truth. You get relative probability, right? You could say, well, you know, there's no, like, you know, famously Einstein, when he came up with the general theory of relativity, his predictions for the precession of Mercury were wrong. And Einstein said, no, I agree that we should measure against the data, but I think my theory is right, and I think the data is wrong, which was a gutsy move. And they did the next experiment in a couple of years, and it turned out Einstein was right. So believing in the scientific method does not mean that you naively assume that whatever the data says must be the truth. It means you acknowledge the burden of proof, right? It says, okay, I agree the data looks like it's wrong, but here's the reasons why I think the data is off. It also means when you say that And that you sort of say, like, maybe a good way is the burden of proof, is that where the data is in one direction, then you acknowledge that, yes, I have reasons for believing that the data is skewed, and here's the, and then more importantly, the way you resolve disputes is that we propose experiments, and that we say, okay, if this is true or that's true, then we can make a prediction about this, and when we uncover the evidence, we would see, you know, one way or the other. So here's an interesting one. How well do you think religion is correlated with human flourishing?
Well, what is religion? Is religion...
you're the one who used
me,
that phrase.
To me, religion... the last time?
You're the one who said, you know, well, we shouldn't have people making decisions based on religious or personal views.
Yes.
I'm saying, this question is like, is there anything other than religion and than personal views?
Well, religion is a system. Religion is a system of control. You know, you can see the Catholic Church.
Oh, sorry.
Church,
So let's be precise here. So people who have affiliation with organizations, okay, and how is religion different from any other form of tribalism?
It isn't. However...
Okay, so what you really mean is... Okay.
It is... if you use... Okay, the reason religion is bad is because it can be misused so easily.
Okay.
It is
so what is it?
All
what is
the time.
It? Do you know any other thing in this world? Science, love, politics, podcasting... Can you name anything in this world that is never used for evil?
No, not the first thing we
That's a ridiculous claim to use to discredit religion.
It is. Well,
it's a non-scientific claim. Make a scientific statement that you can justify.
Well, the core of religion, right?
I'm the one who wants to use that.
The core of religion is based on individuals. Belief on something that you cannot see, you cannot talk to it, you cannot prove that it exists, you cannot prove that it doesn't exist either. So, you can use even, you know, get away from religion.
Back up. We just said at the very beginning of this podcast that all society depends on things that are transcendent. And so... Yes, the core, fundamental, underlying assumption of everything, space, time, matter, energy, are intrinsically undetectable. So that is no different than everything else.
Well, we have math, right? We have math, something that, you know, we invented.
Math itself is based on a whole series of axioms of dubious validity.
Right? Exactly.
You can come up with...
Yes,
we can create formal systems. We can create formal systems where we say, okay, given these assumptions and this machinery for interpreting those assumptions, we can generate mathematical proofs of things. Yes, math is nice. Has very little to do with science, except that it's a very complicated machine for turning theories. So the reason math interacts with science is that when you make a claim, math allows you to encode that in a very rigid deterministic system so that it is easier to tell when you are wrong or lying to yourself. That is the intersection of math with science. Okay? So that's really nice. It doesn't stop us from having broken models or disagreeing violently about the assumptions that go into those models. Mathematical proof is a very different thing than scientific proof, and we already said we're not basing our system on math, we're basing our system on science.
Yeah, math is not perfect. You know, math is very useful. It's very useful, but it's not perfect.
Right, but I mean, math is a special case. I mean, math, as I like to say, there's basically three universes that we study. There's the logical universe, which is, you know, what math studies and computer algorithms live in, where you have nice, simple axioms and formal systems. Then you have the physical world, which is the things that physics measures, things that have mass, energy, position and velocity, right? And then the last category is what I call the emotional universe or the spiritual universe. Things like truth, love, beauty, fairness, red, pain, right? These are things that have human affect that can, you know, have consequences in the real world and correlates in the real world, but are not themselves directly measurable. Right? And so, have you come up with any scientific, can you come up with any meaningful statement that distinguishes what you call religion from any other tribe or system of belief? Or is it just your unscientific
opinion? My opinion? There's a little bit of that, or maybe a lot of that. Like, I cannot, you know, there are many good people that believe in this entity. But then, you know, the Romans did too. And, you know, they believe in many of them. But I'm saying that if you cannot tell me, people say, hey, you should pray, or you should talk to him and whatever. And like, why? There's nothing for me to talk. I don't believe in that. I don't share that.
I can give you a good answer to that. I can give you a good answer to that if you actually wanted to ask me, but that's a separate answer. Okay. Keep going.
So when you base your beliefs in something that cannot be, it is impossible to prove it. In science, we have the tools to,
So, Ernest, you are fundamentally misunderstanding the scientific process. You don't understand what the whole point of science is. We make things up in our heads.
Yes.
And then we try to figure out how to match the consequences of those beliefs with the real world. The beliefs themselves are completely fictitious and made up in our heads in science.
Well, isn't that exactly me? You kind of think about,
yes,
you know,
why
is the apple falling? Why is the apple falling?
The apple was real.
Why?
So
there you go. You have to think.
Newton made up this fiction called the law of gravity. He made that up in his head as a thing. He gave it the name gravity. And he just asserted that it's the same thing that runs, that makes an apple fall to Earth, makes the moon go around in the sky. And he came up with a mathematical formulation of it, which was wrong, but it was close enough that it gave some decent experimental results for a few centuries.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Gravity itself, no one has seen. No one today even understands or agrees exactly what it is. Okay, it's an impossible business thing, but it has concrete consequences.
Exactly.
And allows you to make choices. So, yeah, if you mean religion as some artificial philosophic construct, then that's not at all what religion is in the real world, how it's actually used by people or abused by people. Okay? Because every religion that I know of makes a ton of predictions, some of which are wildly off and some of which are often accurate. And so to say that because the premises of religion are undecipherable, and therefore the whole thing is unscientific, is an extremely unscientific statement. If you actually look at the data, you will see that all these religions have a variety of promises they make. Some are true, some are false, but they are in fact eminently observable, and especially in modern times, where we have a free market in religion, consumers quickly learn, relatively quickly learn which things are, living up to their promises and which ones aren't. And, oh, by the way, this is the same true for all the other belief systems we have going on, too. I mean, you still haven't told me, other than the scientific method, which principles you actually believe in. But you seem to have very strong opinions that certain things are wrong.
I believe in the self-determinism, or
self-determinism, people
say.
But you also believe in pro-social behavior. Did you believe in self-determinism or pro-social behavior?
They can both apply. You can say Some people say that there is no such thing as self-determinism. That all we are is passengers in our bodies. That we don't make decisions.
And arguably, the most advanced scientists would claim that that is what the data strongly suggests.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I'm here.
So you're choosing to believe in self-determinism against the evidence.
Well, it's when I say self-determinism, it's like a woman wants not to have a woman wants to terminate her abortion. This is her body, right?
Okay. So when you
say something, able to do that.
Okay.
Without
what I'm hearing you say is there something about being a woman that means she has a right to decide the fate of a fetus, but there's something about a fetus which the fetus does not possess that means it doesn't have that right.
Yeah, that's
and is that a
like
scientific statement, or is that a purely philosophic one?
That is a statement.
Or a personal prejudice.
It's trying to get itself into the mind of every woman.
Okay, and if I want to get into the mind of every fetus, is that not allowed?
You can do it, but it's not helpful to anybody, not to the fetus,
not to
the woman.
Okay, are you saying you're... So we're being scientific here, sorry, right? Did you have a scientific reason for preferring women over fetuses?
Scientific?
Or is that a prejudice?
I put myself in the place of a woman. I put myself in the place of a woman in the 1800s. She was raped. And you know, she doesn't want people to know whatever might have been her father. I don't know. But this woman is in that. Now she has to decide whether to kill herself or go to some, you know, illegal, you know, place where they're going to stick some metal in her body to try to kill the baby.
Right. It's wonderful that you have such empathy. Are you making a scientific argument?
No, that's...
Are you just trying to illustrate your prejudice in a dramatic way?
Correct, yes. That's what I do.
Okay. Okay, so, and you, I think we just said that our standard is scientific method.
Yes.
So are we still working on that standard?
Yes. It has been
useful. Or do you want to hold your position?
So, yes.
Are you only going to... You said that if I point out that you're acting contrary to scientific method, you will stop. Are you going to stop?
Yes. Okay.
Okay, so there are scientific... criteria one could use to argue whether something is alive or not, or whether something is human or not, right? It's an important point. We could come up with, we have this abstract, philosophical, let's say religious belief in self-determinism. And we could say, well, there are certainly scientific correlates of that we can look to. Brain activity, heartbeat, the ability to feel pain, the ability to breathe on one's own. And we could attempt to encode our beliefs in those scientifically defensible terms. Or we could just say, you know, metric we agreed on, well, if a belief or a policy can be expressed in more scientific terms and judged on more scientific terms, that's the better one. So would you not want, Ernest, to have a policy on abortion that is based on the best available scientific evidence and information? Or do you want one that matches your emotional beliefs?
Something that I want is a principle is fairness and justice.
What?
So
fairness and justice. Okay. Do those trump scientific method or the ability to reduce
science? No. I'm saying let's take the scientific method. Let's say we can tell for certain. That there's a baby growing in a woman's body. Well, it is her body, right? She has right.
The baby doesn't have a body? Where does that come? I don't see the...
I am not discussing the baby. I'm discussing the woman.
Why not? Okay,
The baby doesn't have a brain.
That is not a scientific statement. Okay, so you're saying are you making a scientific statement, or are you making
philosophical statement? No, it is not scientific. I'm saying...
Okay, but why are we having this conversation? I thought the most important conversations we have was to use the scientific method. So you're saying, you are admitting that your beliefs in this matter are not really susceptible to science. So that you're just like all the religious people that you keep dissing and complaining about, is that you believe in something intangible that can't be measured by science. And that's why you really hate religion, because they're just like you.
No, no, no. I'm saying science can tell us you're pregnant. That's it. Okay, you're pregnant. That's it. Great. That science told us that you're pregnant. Now, what are you going to do as a woman? As a woman, you have that information, that very accurate information, that you're pregnant.
Sorry.
Now, somebody else,
okay,
somebody else, you know, 100 miles from 400 miles from where she lives, is telling her, you must not abort this baby. And why? What is hurting him?
Okay, okay, Ernest. So what are you saying, though? You are asserting that people who are physically proximate should have more control than those who are. Is there a principle here, or is this just another dramatic example? Because the principle is that the proximity is the statement for making decisions.
So then
why are you bringing that up then?
Let's put it this way. I'm
running out of time here, Ernest.
Oh.
What I'm hearing is that you don't really want to be pinned to the scientific standard.
We can use science as a tool.
But what is, so that's not really your top principle then, is it?
I guess it's not.
Fair enough. So then, Ernest, you are guilty of the exact same thing you accuse religious people of, except what's worse is you don't even know what it is you believe. At least when I say I'm a Christian, I believe it. I have a clear set of things I believe. Now, I may be lying to myself, and frequently am, and there's the public veneer we put on, and one could argue whether hypocrisy is better than ignorance. But the reality is everyone has a set of beliefs they have. Rarely do we put them to the scientific test. Rarely do we even want to use science as the way for resolving disagreements between them. And more importantly, you know, as we discussed last week, the really hard part is the fact that we have principles we think we hold, and yet we act in ways very contrary to them all the time. And this is why, Ernest, building a society is really, really mother-forking hard. because people lie to themselves and lie to each other all the time. And the fact that we can ever manage to work in ways that transcend that is really insanely remarkable.
That's the problem. The problem is that we want to live everybody together. And make a one.
We all agreed. We went through this last season, right? In order to get the world you want, we need to have a common shared culture of things that allow us a great deal of individual freedom, but also allow us to participate in this larger community, so we're not stuck in our little hobbles. The things you want. I got to end on this, Ernest, and I want you to really think about this, because we need to really talk about this. You have a personal religion. You have a set of things that you really think of are inviolate and transcendent that really matters.
Yes,
and you think
correct.
It's actually
yes.
really important that everyone actually shares values like that in order for us to be survive as a species.
Well, we cannot have everybody shares the exact same values, but you know, it will be
but there's
nice,
certain aspects of those.
Yeah.
But there are certain things that you think the world would be better if more people shared those.
Correct.
Yes, but here's the thing, Ernest.
But would be my version of the world. I guess you're going to say that. That would be my world.
And the question is, are you willing to write them down and be judged by it? Or do you want to just use them as a stick to complain how everyone else is living their lives?
Yes, I am willing to write them down, right?
And have yourself judged by them.
No. Well, yeah.
Not by people, but
a system that, you know, we have to turn this into. First of all, we have to rewrite the Constitution. Yeah, because we keep saying, this is a flawed system. Well, we have to rewrite it. We have to start over. You know, that's what we do.
I can believe that there are better systems out there, and I have lots of theories. I spent decades working on this problem. That's the easy part. The hard part is you have not yet convinced me that you hold any principles that you yourself are willing to be held accountable to.
Of course.
You can say it's nice. Everyone lives this way, but what?
Yeah. If I, you know, I say awesome. Don't lie. Don't ever lie. You know, lying is bad.
When you say, right? What do you mean by don't lie? You mean saying things that you don't deeply believe, or lying to yourself okay?
Don't say something that you know is not true and say
no,
that.
Don't only say things that are not true. Okay, we can agree on that. That's a useful heuristic most of the time. I still wrestle with the, what if you're a Jew hiding, if you're a Dutchman hiding Jews from the Nazis. You know, that's an edge case I don't want to weigh in on. But, white lies. But fine. You're willing to be held to that principle. Fine. Okay, don't say things you don't know. Knowingly. Say, do you know that it's true? Okay. So that's a principle that you're willing to be held to.
Mm-hmm.
That's not enough to build a society on, but it's somewhere to start.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that, you know, and that one is going to come back to haunt you, by the way, Ernest, because you're going to say that I know is not mm-hmm. true. And I'm going to say, Ernest, didn't we just agree that that was not true? Then why are you still saying it?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because it's hard.
Well,
see, even the things that you sincerely believe it, there's things that we can consistently follow on, which is quite a bit harder. And the problem is, to build a society, a system. I used to think, Ernest, that the hard part was figuring out the answer. Then I realized, as hard as that is, that's at best one third of the journey. The second part is actually living out those values consistently in a way that other people can see them and know that you're actually living out those values. Because otherwise,
yes.
It's just
yeah.
philosophical, right? And we still haven't really addressed that question from last week. And then the third part is actually explaining those insights to people in a way that they can apprehend it and live it out themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, we haven't really even gotten to the first part. We've got one principle that we think you're willing to be held accountable to, which is, not telling lies. So that's good. We tried the scientific method. That didn't seem to work as well as we had hoped it would, because there are things which are not amenable to the scientific method. And so I think next week I'm going to put you on the hot seat and say, okay, tell me what your principles are that you're willing to be held accountable to obeying.
Okay.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay. So I'm going to give you my system of principles. Okay.
System of principles, or even a few draft principles, and whatever. I've already sent you mine and my Radical Centrist Manifesto. I have others, depending on the context. But yeah. Anyway, this was a great deal of fun for me. I hope it wasn't too much at your expense.
Oh no. All right. I like this.
That's great, Ernest. Appreciate the time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ernest.
Talk to you next week.
All right.
Thank you, Ernest. Bye.